Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, growing up in a haunted house. Growing up in a haunted house, John Olson's initial experiences with the paranormal were vast. When you have unexplained noises, sights, feelings invading your life on a regular basis, it's easy to accept the paranormal simply as a part of life. As John grew older, his understanding and quest to learn about ghosts grew deeper. This led him to investigate not only the hauntings that dotted his life, but also the experiences of others who led a haunted life. Growing up in a haunted house turned out to be a more common experience than most would imagine. Today on The Grave Talks, we hear the personal haunted story of John Olson.
So I grew up in this home that was over 100 years old. It was built roughly in the 1880s. It was originally built by the railroad back in the day here in Utah. The railroad would pay or get paid from the government using land grants. And then they would take that land and usually either have it developed and sell or something like that in order to make the money to build the railroad. And this land that I grew up on was part of that here in northern Utah. And they had built the house and then sold it. And it became an old farmhouse. And it stayed in my family on my father's side from about the second owner, which was close to the turn of the century, the 1900s. And my parents had bought it. It had been abandoned for about 5 years. So they had to come in and do a lot of cleaning and start renovating it. And that was in the 60s. And then me and my sister and my brother came along in the mid-70s. And as I grew up in the 80s, got to be about 8 years old, I realized that the house that I lived in was considerably different than my friends' houses. I remember the very first thing that we noticed, my sister and I, was what we termed the stair monster. And the reason we called it that was at any time during the day, there was a steep set of stairs that went from the main level up to the second level where my sister and I, my bedroom and my brother's bedroom was. And in fact, if you built that today, it was no way it would pass code because it was so steep. And it ran over the one bathroom that we did have. And at any point of the day, you could hear heavy footsteps going up and down or fast children's footsteps going up and down. And of course you'd run around and look and there wouldn't be anybody there. So we started calling it the stair monster because that was the first thing that we kind of connected. It wasn't long before we started having other experiences in the house. And, my parents at the time, growing up in a small town, were really afraid of us sharing our experiences outside of the home. They were afraid people were going to think we were weird because we had a ghost in our house. And so we told each other the stories and we shared it inside the home, but we didn't really share it outside of the home. And I remember one story that stands out to me. I was in eighth grade. And I just got home from school and nobody was home yet. My mother was out running errands and I made myself a sandwich and went into the living room, sat down on the couch and was going to get ready to turn on the television. And something caught my attention at the corner of the room at the doorway. And I looked and here was an extremely tall man in a white shirt and overalls and a wide-brimmed hat, and he was mostly see-through. I couldn't make out any facial features. And he walked into the room, and across from the couch I was sitting on was a rocking chair, and he sat in the rocking chair and started rocking back and forth. And I remember closing my eyes and counting to 10 and opening my eyes again, and he was gone, but the rocking chair continued to rock for a minute and then stop. And I jumped up and went to the front porch and sat until my mother got home, because I didn't want to be in the house alone. But there were so many things like that that went on. We would have things go missing and then reappear several days later. One of the example of that, I remember my brother and I were in the basement. It was a Saturday morning, and me and my brother and my dad were the only ones home. And my dad, back in the day when you had to order, if you wanted something special, you had to order out of a catalog. He had ordered some new hunting boots, and they had shown up, and he was excited about putting them together. And he got the boots out and set them on the table, and got the laces out and set them on the table next to the boots, and then turned around to get scissors to cut all of the packaging off. And when he turned around, the boots were there, but the boot straps were gone. The shoelaces were completely gone. And I remember my brother and I were in the basement, and he yelled at us down the stairs to bring back his shoelaces. And we looked at each other, and we said, "We haven't left the basement. What are you talking about?" And he looked all over the house for about a half an hour and could not find those shoelaces, under the table, over. And so he finally gave up on it and went out to the front porch to start doing some chores. And sure enough, laying on the table outside of the house was the shoelaces, unwrapped and lying over the picnic table that we had just outside of the door. And again, me and my brother had never left the basement. Nobody else was in the house. And it was around that time we realized that it was really rather a trickster ghost. It really enjoyed playing tricks on people. And it never felt malicious, but it definitely had an edge to it where it enjoyed to play pranks on people. And in particular, it liked to pick people that either was more afraid of it, or that at first denied it, which was part of my dad. My dad denied that there was anything in the home at all. And then he had to finally start relenting and say, "Yeah, there's definitely something here that is abnormal." But as I got older and I had friends over at the house as a teenager, I remember a story. I was upstairs with a friend of mine, and we were studying biology, and I was reading my book, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she picks up her book, and she slams it down on the little coffee table, and she looks at me, and I said, "What's going on? What's the matter?" And she says, "What is that?" And I looked at her, and I'm like, what is what? And she says, "We've been up here for about 30 minutes, and in that time, three times somebody has run up your stairs here or back down the stairs, and there's nobody on your stairs. What's going on?" And I said, and I finally had to break down and say, "Oh," I said, "well, my house is haunted." And I told her some of the stories. And from there, I suddenly became the guy at all the parties that had the ghost stories, and people wanted to hear about my house and my experiences. And after I started doing that, I had more and more people coming to me and bringing me their stories. But by the time I was 17, I was interviewing people and collecting their stories and jotting them down, knowing that one day I wanted to write at least one book, if not more, talking about their stories and my experiences.
So it really kind of made you socially the guy that it's safe to talk to about these things, because other people you go and share these stories to, they're going to think you're crazy. But they knew that this was already a reality for you. So did you have a lot of friends that would come to you with their own stories that were not going to share it with anybody else?
Oh, yeah. Yes. It would be interesting, because I would be at a party, and there would be a whole room of people, and I would share my experiences, and some people would laugh and some people would be interested. But inevitably, it would be a day or two later that one of my friends or somebody who was at the party would come to me on their own and say, I had this experience happen to me. And they always started, it's amazing how many of them start with, I'm not crazy, I promise, but I've had this experience and I want to share it with you, because they did. They felt safe because of my background and because of what I had experienced. And because I was able to share it, they felt very comfortable sharing their experiences with me.
Let's go back to, you had mentioned your dad at some point finally had to be like, okay, there's something going on here, because I know you guys, you kids aren't the ones responsible for all the mischievous things going on around here. How were your parents handling that as things continued to escalate and as more things started to happen? What was the progression there? Was it immediate acceptance that, okay, there's something ghostly going on here, or how did that go?
Well, my mother was very much more open to it than my dad. I think my dad was a little bit more traditional, and his fear was more along that people would think we were crazy. I remember I came home one day, and at the time there was only one bathroom in the house, and it had an opening to the front area and then also to my parents' bedroom. And I came home and all of a sudden the door is off on my parents' side of the bathroom and my dad is walling it up. He's preparing to wall it up. And I thought that was extremely strange. And I asked, why are you walling that part up? And my dad wouldn't give me a straight answer. But it wasn't until years later that my mother explained to me that she would wake up in the middle of the night, and no matter if they shut the door or what they did, she would wake up in the middle of the night, and this gentleman with the wide-brimmed hat would be standing in the doorway staring at them from the bathroom. And they finally got so sick of that their final solution was to wall up that door so there was only one entrance to the bathroom. And it wasn't until we were older that my parents started opening up and saying, yeah, these are the experiences that we had. And their reasoning was they didn't want us to be any more afraid than we were. But honestly, growing up in that, I was not afraid. By the time I was, 10, 11 years old, though some things did happen, like seeing that full body apparition was frightening. For the most part, when it happened, it was more a peculiarity or almost for me an excitement, because I got so excited in the paranormal. I read every book I could. I did everything that I could to explore it, because at the time I wasn't allowed to share my stories. But it definitely happened to everybody in the house. My parents just took longer to be able to open up to us kids and share their stories with us.
Did you ever, I mean, obviously, you know what the house was, that it was involved with the railroad. It was a railroad house. Mm-hmm. But were you able to get any more information about the former residents there or what had gone on in the house prior to it being abandoned and your family taking it over?
The one thing that I was able to find, other than the records of who owned it, I was able to find that. And interestingly enough, my grandparents lived just a block away. My family on my dad's side goes all the way back to the original pioneers that came across the plains and settled northern Utah. And when my grandmother passed away, we were cleaning out her house and everything, and we found quite a few old photo albums. And I remember looking through one of the photo albums, and I turned the page and I almost fell over, because there was a picture of my house, an old picture of my house, with a man with a white shirt and overalls, tall, skinny, with a wide brim hat. And I about fell over, because that was the gentleman that's haunting the house. And come to find out, it was a great, great uncle who owned it during the early 19th century, 1900s, and who had passed away there. They had raised a family there, and he had passed away there. And So I kind of got a good connection that way of that's at least one of the spirits that's there. But other than that, it's hard to tell. There has been one other apparition, which is a shorter gentleman with a beard, but we haven't been able to actually connect who he's connected to or how he is connected to the house.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.